KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning. Joining me now in the studio from Utah State Parks, park naturalist Kathy Donnell. Good morning.
Good morning. So many of the parks are going to their winter rate. So when you come into through the entrance stations, please check the fee and pay the appropriate fees to avoid citations in the state parks. If campgrounds are open this time of year, they are first come, first serve. At Deer Creek State Park, campgrounds have power and sewer at the sites. Potable water is available near the main entrance of the park. The fee for camping is $20. The main boat ramp is open and will remain open until freezing temperatures. The island ramp is closed. The wedge dock is in the water. As the water temperature drops, the trout fishing is heating up. We strongly encourage all boaters to wear their life vests at this time of year. Deer Creek Reservoir is considered suspect for quagga mussel. The current dry time is 18 days or decontamination before entering another body of water. Quagga technicians are available to perform decontamination for vessels between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. each day of the week. Wasatch Mountain State Park's Visitor Center is open every day from 8 to 5, except on Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Day. Cottonwood Campground is open until the snow flies. Chalet and cabins are open year-round, and reservations can be made through Reserve America. Recently, two new restrooms were installed thanks to the Wasatch Trails Alliance and Mountain Trails Foundation for the Boulder Basin one at the top of the Wow Trail, and Friends of Wasatch for the Visitor Center one. Remember, Guardsman's Pass, Snake Creek Canyon, and Cascade Springs gates will most likely be closed by November 4th. The Lake Course Golf Course and the Silver Golf Course are open. Reduced fall pricing is $38 for 18 holes with a cart. Courses will stay open through Thanksgiving weekend or until snow shuts them down. New annual golf passes will be available for next year, so stay tuned for more info. They will go on sale in December. Upcoming events include Dark Skies What's the Hype on November 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. Learn why the area parks are applying to become dark sky parks. Enjoy starry treats and some stargazing with the Salt Lake Astronomical Society. Jordan-L State Park has three campgrounds and cabins open. Park office is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5. The Nature Center and Marina Store are now closed for the season. Call 435-615-7397 to get your boat winterized or for winter storage options. Courtesy docks are in at both the main ramp and the PWC ramp. Procedures for the boat slips and summer dry storage will be coming out in mid-November. Applications will be due in early January. All information will be available on the website. Remember that kokanee are spawning, and it's illegal to possess them between September 10th and November 30th. The event center is now accepting reservations for 2018 weddings and ceremonies. Rockport State Park. Campgrounds are open and the water is off. Campers may fill up with fresh water at the dump station or dump their tanks. The Riverside Campground and the Old Church are closed for the season. Boat ramp is open and wedge docks are still available. Rockport will be holding another tagged fish ice fishing contest this winter. Look for the events page at stateparks.utah.gov or Rockport's Facebook page for more details in December. And at East Canyon, Dixie Campground, the yurts and cabins are open and available for rent during the winter season. All trails are open. Wildlife has been abundant this fall. The annual tagged fish contest is still going on, and you can still sign up by visiting East Canyon's website. The boat ramp at East Canyon is open, and the wedge docks are in. Remember to make your 2018 camping reservations 16 weeks in advance, and annual state park passes make great Christmas gifts.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Kathy. See you next month. 8:15 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, spending most of the meeting discussing next year's budget before holding a public hearing on a proposed 12-lot subdivision known as Little Valley. On the phone with details, I have County Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with the public hearing. We had heard that a big crowd in opposition to the project could show. Did they?
Yes, they did. We had... I'm not good at estimating numbers, but, you know, easily 50 to 75 people.
And why are they against this?
I think most of them are surrounding landowners, and they're concerned about the size of lot for that area, where most of the lots range from 9 acres up to 14. And there were concerns voiced about a seasonal stream that flows, you know, depending on the water year, about half of the year through the area, and protecting that and the fact that these smaller lots would be on septic and wildlife. I would say those were the main concerns.
So the special exception before the county council was what, to change the development agreement that would allow for lots less than 5 acres?
Yes. They're requesting a change down to as low as 2.5 acres. And there originally, apparently were 6 lots approved for that area. And through the third amendment to that development agreement, they were able to transfer some of the other development rights into the property. And so they were looking at adding an additional 6 for a total of 12 lots. And those were supposed to be 5 acres.
Right. I mean, so when we're talking about more than 100 acres for the entire development, I mean, 5 acres per lot doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Well, one question that we have that we'll have answered, we did continue the hearing until we'll actually hold a special meeting on November 20th at 6 o'clock to continue this item, since we've canceled our regular meeting on the eve of Thanksgiving, the 22nd. We're going to add a special meeting just due to conflicts with other dates.
Okay. So the special meeting, that'll be at the Sheldon Richens building then?
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. So the staff report had noted that the applicant had complied with the standards. Did the council make any findings on that?
Well, because we felt like we needed more information, we didn't discuss those 4 factors in a lot of detail. I think one that we have the most concern with is we take giving a special exception very seriously, and we try to always reserve it for a true special exception. So personally, that's one of the first things that I'll be looking at is it truly a special exception? Do they have other options? And they actually, you know, it's a development of the total of about 2,800 acres. And, you know, there are obviously other places where you could put some of this density. However, it's always nice to try to move development off of hillsides and up on the top of ridges. And so that's a question that council had, and we would like information back from staff on, you know, are they allowed to build on the entire parcel? Or are they trying to maintain those 12 lots? And the only way they can get those is by moving them off the hillside, because they're not permitted to build on the hillside. We had some maps that showed what the percent grade differences were, but it was kind of difficult to see how that would impact the placement of lots. You know, we have a restriction that you can't build on grades greater than 30%.
So why is it that the council can't wait until its next regularly scheduled meeting at the end of the month or something? I mean, why do you need a special meeting for this?
Well, we're canceling the 22nd. Our agenda next week would have been too soon for them to get the requested information. Our meeting on the 15th is incredibly full. Our meeting on the 29th is very full. And then on the 6th, and 13th of December, we hold our 2 truth and taxation hearings. And we felt like instead of trying to piggyback this on one of those, it would be easiest if we just added a quick special meeting. Well, I'm not going to say quick, but a special meeting at 6 o'clock on the 20th.
So you're a Silver Creek resident. Do you get to vote on this?
I do get to vote on this. I don't live adjacent. I think if I lived adjacent to the property, I might feel differently and feel like I needed to recuse myself. A lot of the people that live around there, it's not a neighborhood where, I mean, we're so spaced out. You don't probably have the same relationships within the neighborhood unless
Mountain
you know
money,
through something specific. So I can't say, you know, the people that I do know that live in close proximity, it's through a relationship that anybody on the council might have.
Sure. Let's see. Again, a special public meeting will be held on this Monday, November 20th, 6 p.m. at the Sheldon Richens Building.
Uh-huh.
The council also met...
I would just add one more thing to that that was brought up, and that is there was a question brought up by one of the concerned citizens that possibly all of the development rights for the preserve had already been used up, and that this particular parcel was actually mislabeled. So that's one thing we need to investigate and make sure that the facts that we had presented to us were correct.
Oh, okay. The council also met in closed session yesterday about property acquisition. Any news on the acquisition of the Oscarthorpe Ranch there on Old Ranch Road?
No, we're still in discussions and continue to communicate.
All right.
But no new news.
The rest of the meeting looks like it dealt mostly with budget presentations. It sounds like the council then is moving forward with a tax increase?
Well, I can speak for myself. We haven't been through all the department presentations. Right now, what's been presented to us has been a 15% increase, and then Tom has said that he would recommend an additional 12% possibly to help bolster the fund balance. So those are discussions that we'll have after we get through all of the different department presentations. I've been incredibly impressed with the presentation so far. A lot of what they're facing is meeting statutory requirements, you know, that they're mandated by the state. You know, whether it's the health department or the sheriff's office, you know, and those come with costs that often go unfunded, as, at least from the state level.
Hmm. You did hear from the sheriff, and I believe that this is the county's number one expense every year, yeah, public safety?
It is. Uh-huh.
And so the sheriff is looking for a budget increase?
He would like to see a budget increase. Primarily to provide, you know, additional benefits to his employees. He didn't have any huge asks, you know, within his budget. He's been very conservative. He did make a comment that, you know, we asked them, the different departments, to let us know how they're meeting council objectives, our strategic initiatives. And in the area of sustainability, they've been converting to some electric vehicles or hybrids. And he was really concerned that they wouldn't be suitable for the sheriff's office. So he and Frank Smith volunteered, felt like they had to set an example and they would be the first ones to try them. And he loved them. And he's going to try to, as he has his annual fleet replacement, and that's not, of course, the whole fleet, but as he has vehicles that come up for replacement that are with, for instance, it wouldn't be used for patrol vehicles, but because they have not only the need for, you know, being able to have a high rate of speed, but they also have a huge electronic draw because of all the equipment in those vehicles. But those, like detectives and other personnel like that aren't specific to patrol, they're going to slowly try to convert those over to these hybrid vehicles. And then he also had a correlating reduction in his fuel costs. He said the fuel costs for his vehicle and Frank Smith's vehicle is half of what it had been.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Also heard a presentation from the Mountain Regional Water District about their budget. Any news out of that?
No, I would say that they have had increased revenues due to higher water sales. That's in part due to Summit Water requesting greater supplies and wholesale water, and then also just having a hot, dry summer. You know, people use more water. And they do a lot in the area of sustainability also. Energy use is a big part of their budget. It used to be about 14%. They've been able to reduce it to about 9% through things like using a series of smaller pumps instead of one larger pump that I guess are big energy hogs, and trying to pump at night when their energy costs are lower. But due to that decrease, due to the increase in revenues, they were concerned in the future when they will have higher fees that they have to pay to Weber Basin as part of the regionalization project. They were concerned that they were going to have to increase water rates. And now they think that probably won't have to happen until at least 2019. So that's good news.
Yeah. Anything else from the meeting that you think worth noting? Any public comments or anything?
No other public comments. We appreciate people turning out for the public hearing that we did have on the Little Valley subdivision. We had another great presentation from the emergency management system, which is our ambulance services. And, you know, they're all doing creative things. North Summit, Ken Smith, the fire chief, has a knack for getting used equipment and refurbishing it. And he's been able to really provide a high level of service and be able to use really decent equipment in that area on a shoestring. So, again, I've been really impressed with the resourcefulness and
all right.
Look forward to more presentations from other departments.
Okay, real quick, I noticed a post from North Summit Recreation saying that they are under pressure from various grant committees about their lack of reserves and funding, I guess, to support a park development project. Do you know what they're referring to?
You know, I don't. I know their last two attempts at passing a bond have failed. The first one, I believe, citizens felt like it was too grandiose. It was pretty ambitious. And the second one was very scaled back. It was really to help provide more funding for just recreation programming. And that was turned down. So I'm not sure what that is about. We'll have to check into that for you.
Okay. Hey, Kim, appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Kim Carson, a member of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. 8:31 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the U.S. Environmental, the U.S. EPA for Region 8 has published notice that in cooperation with the Utah Department of Environmental Quality, a second five-year review of what's known as Operable Unit 1 of the Richardson Flat Tailings Superfund site will be conducted and scheduled to be completed by next February. On the phone with me to tell us what this means and how you can provide input is Catherine Jenkins. She is the EPA Community Involvement Coordinator. Good morning, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. So let's just start with a little background, if you would. Tell us what an operable unit is, how many there are as part of this Richardson Flat Tailings Superfund site.
Sure. Let me just introduce to you my site project manager. His name is Rob Parker, and he will be able to answer all the specific questions about the site for you.
Oh, okay. Hi, Rob.
Good morning. Good morning. Okay. Happy to answer your question. So the Richardson Flat site is an area east of Park City along Silver Creek, and it's been environmentally impacted by mining operations dating back as far as the late 1800s and early 1900s. Mining operators would historically dispose of mine waste material directly into these streams, such as Silver Creek, and in later years of operation would consolidate mine waste materials into impoundments. The site has been broken up into a few different parts. First, the Richardson Flat impoundment itself, which is operable Unit 1. Second, water coming out of a drain installed underneath Prospector Square, which is operable Unit 4. And operable Unit 2 and 3, which are mine tailings that have come to be located along Silver Creek from Park City all the way down to I-80. The Richardson Flat Tailings Impoundment is called operable Unit 1, like I mentioned. Additionally, EPA is also involved with work at the other operable units, and we are collecting data to understand the environmental conditions to inform those long-term solution options. But at operable Unit 1, what we're talking about this morning is the five-year review that we're currently conducting.
So if this is the second review, there must have been a first review, and that had good results?
It did, yeah. The previous review deemed that the remedy was protective. Currently, we're in the process of a second five-year review. As part of that, EPA gathers information necessary to determine the protectiveness of the remedy. In September, EPA completed a site inspection with our state and federal partners, as well as the property owner. EPA is still evaluating information to complete the five-year review, and like you mentioned, it will be available to the public in the spring of 2018. We certainly encourage community members to be involved in this process. They're encouraged to share information that may help EPA make determinations regarding the protectiveness and effectiveness of the remedy at the site. We ask that if you would like to participate, the community members send comments before January of next year.
So you're basically trying to determine if what's been done on site to protect human health and the environment are still being protective?
Absolutely. So at the time that the remedy decision was made, we made certain assumptions regarding land use. Essentially, we want to ensure that those land use decisions are still intact. As part of our site inspection, we determined that they are, so that's the first step. But like I mentioned earlier, we're certainly interested in hearing from the community on any concerns or questions that they have regarding the remedy that was selected.
Okay. Now, this is all work that was done by United Park City Mines Company and then later Talisker?
That's correct. So in 2007, EPA entered into an agreement with United Park City Mines to implement response actions at the Richardson Flat Impoundment. Again, this is specifically the area that's located east of US 40 and south of Highway 248. The general scope of those response actions at the impoundment included consolidating mine waste material into the primary impoundment. They added additional material to further support the impoundment embankment known as the wedge buttress. And they also excavated work. They did completed excavation work within the water diversion ditch to ensure contaminated materials have been removed and are limiting impact to Silver Creek.
So the tailings remain on site. And again, how is it prevented that the tailings don't get into the groundwater or the nearby stream?
Sure. So first off, our mission here is to protect human health and the environment. And so from the aspect of human health, the tailings that are remaining on site are not impacting human health due to land use restrictions. Right now, the land is used as open space. For instance, there aren't any homes developed onto those areas where there's tailings. And so people are not being impacted by those tailings to a degree that present excess risk. Furthermore, the embankment has been stabilized as part of the remedial action to ensure that there's not going to be a catastrophic release of the tailings. And so I think that's obviously something that's very noteworthy to point out. And then additional work has been completed within the diversion ditch to ensure that water does not flow over the site but around the site. And does not come into contact with tailings as it migrates towards Silver Creek.
All right. So basically, residential development would never be allowed here. But what about, like, playing fields or a golf course at one point, I think, had been talked about?
Sure. So part of the exposure assumptions that were evaluated as a risk assessment when the remedial decision was made back in 2005 included light recreational use, and so we're certainly in communication with the landowner at that site, and would be happy to work with the landowner with any development plans that they want to make in that regard.
So you are still talking with folks from Talisker?
Yeah, as the site owner, we remain in contact with the site owner. And I should respond, actually, by saying that it's United Park City Mines that we're working with, as they're the property owner. And we remain in contact with them. Like I mentioned earlier, as part of our site inspection, we actually did the site inspection with the property owner on site with us. So we certainly remain in contact with them.
All right. Then the reason I ask is because earlier this year, the EPA had filed a lawsuit against United Park and Talisker, basically, I think, because they didn't live up to their side of the agreement to pay to clean up the tailings, as well as the other operable units there along Silver Creek. Can you tell us the status of that?
Sure. So the Department of Justice filed a complaint against United Park City Mines and Talisker for failure to respond to information requests that EPA issued. Specifically, EPA has the authority to request information, and we are pursuing those options through litigation. Unfortunately, as the technical project manager, I don't have a lot of details with regard to that. I can certainly set up a conversation with our legal and enforcement team if you would like to learn more on that topic.
All right. Well, let's talk about the rest of the operable units. Who's cleaning those up? United Park as well?
That's a great question. So as I mentioned earlier, there are three areas of the Richardson Flat site. The previous remedial actions and the focus of this five-year review, like I said, are on the Richardson Flat impoundment itself. EPA is also involved with other work at the site, finding solutions for water coming out of the drain that it was installed underneath Prospector Square, as well as mine tailings that have come to be located along Silver Creek from Park City downstream to I-80. As both of those parts of the site progress, like I said, we're collecting data to understand the environmental conditions to inform the long-term solutions at those sites. But at this point, we're in the data gathering phase, trying to understand the situation at those pieces of the site as well.
Okay. When do you hope to have all of this wrapped up here in terms of collecting comment for that second five-year plan?
Sure. So the five-year review for Operable Unit 1, the Richardson Flat Impoundment, is scheduled to be released spring of 2018. If community members would like to participate in an interview or send comments, we ask that they do so before January of 2018.
All right. And they can submit just comments, what, via email? Is that?
They can, yeah. I encourage folks who are interested in submitting comments to submit comments to the site's community involvement coordinator, Catherine Jenkins. Her email address is Jenkins, J-E-N-K-I-N-S dot Catherine, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E at EPA.gov, G-O-V. Or folks can call Catherine at 303-312-6351.
Okay. Again, we appreciate your time and Catherine's. Rob Parker, again, is the technical project manager there with the operable unit of the Richardson Flat Tailings Superfund site. Thanks for your time, Rob. KPCW News Time now, 8:41. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the fifth annual Live Park City Give PC happens just a week from tomorrow. In the studio with details about this year's goals, I have Mike Ruzek, chairman of the Park City Community Foundation Board, along with Community Foundation Programs Director Ollie Wilder. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, ready to go?
Oh,
Ollie?
Absolutely. And actually, this is the seventh year. Can you believe
it? Seventh.
We started in 2011, so you can count them right on the years.
Okay.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, but we are raring to go. It's a week from Friday, November 10th.
Okay. How many nonprofits do we have participating this year?
We have 107 nonprofits, up one from last year. I don't know who that one was.
Well, actually, it's up a little more than one because, for example, Park City Ski and Snowboard consolidated a bunch of teams that were separate last year. So it gets confusing. But basically, we're really pleased with the number of nonprofits. We feel like it's strong, and it's an amazing cross-section of people doing good work here in Park City.
Okay. And again, the requirements for people to participate are what? I mean, they have to be within Summit and Wasatch County? Or
the nonprofits to participate, they either have to be based in or doing substantial work in Summit County. That's the basic guideline.
Okay. So Wasatch County not included in this?
Well, to be honest, a lot of these organizations do work in Wasatch County, and so many people in Wasatch County actually do interact here. They work here or otherwise. So, I mean, the line's a little gray. Let's just put it that way. But, the primary thing is, are they active around here in general?
Okay. Too late for you to jump in at this point, though.
Yeah, we've pretty much finalized the list. There are some things that need to be complete, but we finalized that. It's fun to think about a couple of the newer nonprofits that are participating for the first time this year. For example, I love Little Bellas. This is an organization that gets girls onto mountain bikes. My colleague, Sam Mueller, who's our office administrator, she's actually a coach for them. And it's really fun to see the kind of work they do. Another one that's new this year is the Brass Foundation, which does avalanche education. And yet another would be Immigrant Legal Services. And you can imagine that there's a lot of call for their services these days.
Okay. So, Mike, the goal has gone up every year. What are we at this year?
We wanted to make it as hard to say as possible, so it's $1,999,999.99.
And you just didn't want to go for an easy $2 million?
It's too easy to say $2 million. So.
And we got a party like it's 1999.
That's right.
Okay, so that's the idea. Like I mentioned, you've made the goal every year. What's the likelihood this year? Because you're bumping up half a million dollars nearly.
Well, last year's goal was 1.5, and we raised 1.73 or 1.4. So it's a little bit of a jump from last year, but I feel like the community is getting around this more and more year after year. So I'm feeling confident that we'll jump over that mark and hopefully into the $2 million mark.
And the jumps tend to be kind of outlandish every year. The year before, we raised $1.3 million. And from that to 1.7, how did that happen? We don't even exactly know. What we get is that the community just keeps rallying more and more around Live PC, Give PC, around the great work that the nonprofits do. So who knows? We're hoping that that 1,999,999 is achievable this year.
Yeah. Already starting to see the emails come in from the nonprofits. So
emails and cars with banners around town and whatnot. So it's definitely a fun day for the whole community to rally, for sure.
Yeah. So is this something, is the goal what the board sets? Is that?
It is. Mm-hmm. We have a committee, and so this is a goal that we set. Actually, Beth Armstrong set this goal to be in particular, so... Thanks, Beth.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the leaderboards and what those are and how they work.
So when we first started, we just had one leaderboard that was an overall. Actually, we had two. We had an overall leaderboard and quote-unquote small nonprofit leaderboard. And we've broken that up a bit. So our headline sponsor, Park City Mountain and Epic Promise, still is the sponsor for the overall leaderboard, where we have a first, second, and third prize of $2,500. $1,500 and $1,000. But then a few years ago, we broke it down into some fields of interest, if you will. And so we have Caring for Each Other, which is sponsored by the Park City Hospital, that also has a first, second, third, and all of these sub-leaderboards are $1,200 or $1,250, $750, and $500. So we have Caring for Each Other, that's sponsored by Park City Hospital, Energize and Enlivening leaderboard, which is sponsored by the Marriott Foundation. Thank you. Keep On Moving leaderboard, sponsored by Ed and Snow Crew. And Protecting Where We Play leaderboard, sponsored by the Endeavor Foundation, which is formerly known as Tesoro, and just learned that today. And Sparking Minds leaderboard, which is sponsored by GBS Benefits.
All right, so the way that that works is not necessarily the amount raised, but the number of people they have supporting.
So it's all based on number of people supporting, yes, and each leaderboard has there's a characterization, obviously, between the different boards. And so, for example, if, you know, let's say Mountain Trails happens to win the overall leaderboard, and they also win the Protecting Where We Play, or would they be more so?
Well, no, that's where they are. And, in fact, what happens is you can only win one leaderboard.
Right.
So the big guys who win the big one don't also win one of the littler ones.
So we try to spread the love as much as possible.
And it is based on unique donors, the number of unique donors. So somebody, if it was by amount, somebody could slap down a big, huge donation and boom, win the leaderboard. That's not the case here. You have to raise money from a lot of different people to win these prizes. And it's a great way to generate more people going to the website, giving. And the website, just as a reminder, livepcgivepc.org. That's where you go. You search for the nonprofits that you care about, that you want to give to. And every time you give to one, you count as a unique donor for them. And that contributes to their possibly winning one of those leaderboard prizes.
Mm-hmm. And when you count unique donors, does a unique donor, you know, because lots of people, what they do is like they say, I've got $500 and I'm going to divvy up between, you know, 5-10 different entities. Is that a unique for each of those 10?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. It counts as a unique donor for each one. I guess the one case that wouldn't count in the same way is if somebody gives two donations to the same organization, they only count once as a unique donor for that organization. But all the ones they give to, they'll count for each of those.
All right. And you've got the sites live right now. I mean, people can start making donations at this point. We just won't hear about how people have done until the 10th.
That's right. So early giving is totally allowed, and it does count toward the prizes and everything else. We don't have a dollar counter on the website until midnight on Friday, November 10th. So, you know, if you're up late that night, check out the website as it clicks over, and you'll see, you know, how much early money has been raised. And that really helps people who might not be in town, want to give early. That's totally acceptable. But a lot of people wait till the day of, till Friday, November 10th, because there's a big excitement around that day, and that's when most of the giving happens.
Okay. And again, we'll be doing updates all day long.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That day we'll be calling in and coming in here to KPCW. And, of course, KPCW is one of the participating nonprofits, so definitely a giving option there.
Yeah, sure are. Okay, anything else, guys, that you want to mention?
Just so happy that the community's rallying around the nonprofits again. This is a fun event. People will be out there in their orange T-shirts all day and waving signs. And so get in the spirit. Give some money.
Okay, Ollie and Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
8:50 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, coming up November 14th, Project ABC will be holding an afternoon work session to present some data from more than 900 surveys, as well as interviews they've done, as well as dozens of community conversations in the studio to share some of what they've learned so far. The Project ABC program director, Jake McIntyre. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you collected surveys for how long? A couple months?
It was a couple of months, I think just short of that.
All right. And we've got 900 of them to sort through?
Yeah, we're going through that process right now, but we received 915 survey responses in total.
All right. And it wasn't just a multiple choice. There were lots of fill in the blanks or opportunities to hear.
Absolutely. So it was a mix of the two. So a lot of just check boxes and, multiple choice type of stuff, and then some free form commenting. And we're in the process of going through that commenting right now.
Yeah. So do you feel like you got a good representation, or is this really a self-serving audience that you heard
now,
from?
We got a really broad representation. We were able to track zip code, so we know exactly where people came from, and we have a great representation across the county and a little outside of the county from kind of a visitor audience. And then we asked people to self-select which category they were, and we have people that were artists, were business owners, were government, were art lovers, were none of the above, were art educators. So we got a really broad range. I think every category we asked for, we heard from someone.
So. Okay. So what can you tell us what you've learned so far?
Largely what we're doing right now is developing kind of profiles of different stakeholder groups that came out of that process. We're still compiling the data. The 14th, the big Project ABC Summit on the 14th is where we'll be sharing the findings that we have. It's still a little bit early to define what those are yet. I know we're only a couple of weeks away, but we're still working on refinement.
Okay, so tell us what happens on the 14th.
Yeah, so on the 14th, we'll be at the Blair Education Center at the Park City Hospital from 1 to 6. And the kind of 1 to 5 range is going to be a series of work sessions. We'll be giving a State of the Arts talk. We'll be talking about kind of the economic impact of arts and culture in Summit County. We'll be talking about what we've learned from the data, and then having some work sessions around validating or challenging that data that we've gathered and the priorities we've come up with. And then the big part of the day is shifting towards action, where we're saying, this is what we've heard, this is what we've learned, now what do we do about it? And because Project ABC is a community-wide collective effort, it's really important that the people that come are ready to kind of step up and almost take ownership of some of the ideas that are emerging out. And so we'll be moving really from listening and collecting to prioritizing and then into action that day.
Okay, so who should be there?
Everyone's welcome. It's a open to the public event. We have an event page up at projectabcsummit.eventbrite.com. You can RSVP there. Particularly the kind of 1 to 5 range during the work sessions, people who are ready to jump in and start working towards action. It's not going to be a little open house kind of thing for that point. It's really about working and diving into the data. From 5 to 6 will be more of an open house. So if you're more casually interested, 5 to 6 is a great time to come and interact with the data and come up with some ideas with us. The 1 to 5 range is really about getting into the work of it.
Yeah, that's a long time. I mean, so what? Tell me what's going to happen during those 4 hours.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different work sessions that are developed. We're working with a team of facilitators to run that, and they'll be the first little bit. We'll be, like I said, talking about the current impact, talking about some of what we've learned from the different stakeholder groups like nonprofits and government and business and visitors. And then we'll be sharing the data that we found. There's a good amount of time dedicated to these are the things we've learned, and now we'd like people to respond to it and interact with it. And then, about half of that time will be dedicated to what do we do with this now and how do we move it forward as priorities and actions.
Right. And when you start talking about moving it forward, we know that means spending money. In terms of the funding, I mean, how is that going to happen?
Yeah, so we know that funding is, you know, coming up time and time again. We know that funding will likely be something that has to be addressed as part of this process. But it's important to remember that it's one part of this process, right? So we're not looking at this as an overall kind of funding scheme for arts and culture. It's bigger than that. So we know that funding will likely be one of the kind of buckets of opportunity that we explore during that day. And if people are interested in talking about specific funding strategies that they might be interested in, that's the time to do it. But funding is just one of, you know, dozens or multiple big picture priorities that we're looking at.
Okay, so we hear a lot of strategic planning, like from the school districts. Is this something similar? Is this what we're developing here?
Yeah, it's similar to strategic planning. We call it cultural planning, but it's mostly just a difference in language, right? The important thing about this is that it's very big picture. This is not about one particular organization or one particular group of artists or government or entity in general. It's the big picture. It's looking at the whole and finding areas for collective opportunity, and then how do we as a collective move those things forward.
So the roadmap.
And the roadmap.
In terms of which way we want to go.
Exactly.
Okay, anything else, Jake, that you want to mention?
No, I mean, I think that I just want to, one, say thank you to everyone. It's so incredible to have received over 900 survey responses, and I'm continually surprised and just thrilled with the engagement we've gotten throughout this whole process. So honestly, just a big thank you.
Okay. You do want to know, you do want to know who's coming, right? Or have chairs set up and stuff. So people do need to RSVP.
Yeah, we would prefer people to RSVP at projectabcsummit.eventbrite.com. So we make sure we have enough, you know, snacks and chairs and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in, Jake.
Thanks, Leslie.